I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome to Morning Invest. I'm Clayton Morris. Coming up on today's show, President-elect Biden moves fast on a new stimulus and the economy. We're going to tell you some breaking news on that stimulus front through some executive orders that could happen. This is going to be great news for student loan holders, people that are flooded with student loan debt. Plus, some breaking news on the coronavirus. We're going to tell you what it is. Just happened moments before the show. Plus, now that Biden has won, will the mainstream media start ignoring the pandemic? President Trump said this would happen this weekend when you were watching all of the coverage. How much coverage of the coronavirus did you see this weekend on your cable news? Plus, should we be drawing up a list of Trump supporters and make sure that they never work again, out of a job totally, forever? One popular congresswoman thinks so. I'm going to tell you who it is. This woman just won re-election. So welcome in to Morning Invest, the only progressive morning show. We cover the stories that I think matter to you, not the Wall Street types of stories that you'll see on the mainstream media. So welcome in on this Monday. Hope you guys had a wonderful weekend, a relaxing weekend, if you could, after we got past the craziness of Saturday. And we saw the crazy volatility up and down, all around the world, and this election is still not over. So we'll tell you the very latest on all of that. But first, I want to tell you about Birch Gold. You know, you need to protect your retirement from these goons on Wall Street. You need to make sure that your family is safe by having some of your money outside of this corrupt banking system. Now, I've been telling you about this for months. One way you can do that is with gold and silver. You've heard me talk about gold and precious metals for years on this show and real estate. And many of you ask me here on the show, I see you in the chat all the time asking me, you know, where do I shop for gold? Where can you shop for gold? Well, you've got to check out Birch Gold. Now, we've set up a special link for you so that you can get their free gold kit right now. But you need to go to this link, morninginvest.com/gold. It's a totally free kit, and you can download it. You can see what it's all about, how you can start buying precious metals and have them shipped to your house. So actual gold, physical gold, shipped to your house, or silver, shipped to your house. Again, that's why all these big countries around the world, China, hoarding gold, buying up as much as they can right now. Because the U.S. dollar and this Wall Street volatility, you do not want your family's future tied to that. So you can start putting some of your savings into real gold and real silver. Stop making Wall Street money. Instead, preserve your wealth. Visit morninginvest.com/gold to get your free gold kit right now. So we've got a lot to get to on the show today, and I do want to start with COVID-19 because we had some breaking news just a short time ago on the coronavirus front. This is some good news because Pfizer, just a few moments ago, saying that their COVID-19 vaccine is 90% effective. 90% effective. Now, there's quite a bit to unpack on this. Obviously, it's not out yet. Trying to get a fast track on this. This would be mind-blowingly fast if we were able to get a vaccine this quickly. And so good for Pfizer and good for these other companies that are racing to figure this out. So what they did, this Pfizer test, is actually pretty impressive. 44,000 people were in this test. They gave some people a saline shot and the other people, they got a coronavirus shot. And what they found is that only about 96 cases popped up after they received the shot. So at 90% effectiveness. Now, this has not been peer reviewed. This has not been looked at fully to be confirmed yet. They still have to go through that process. But this is making Wall Street happy. Wall Street exploded this morning on this news, up 500 already as a result of this news from Pfizer. So this is the question, though. How quickly can we get this thing in and moving through the federal government after these trials are completed? Will it be safe? How quickly can we dispense with this virus or vaccine? You know, we're entering the darkest period right now for COVID in our country's history. Through all of this, 123,000 cases in one day, breaking new records where experts believe we could hit upwards of 200,000 cases in a day. Troubling, though it is, we are learning that the administration, the Trump administration, has basically been playing golf with their task force. So we've learned now from reporting from the White House that Vice President Pence, you know, he's in charge of that task force. They have not met in weeks. This has been confirmed. The coronavirus task force that's currently serving, Mike Pence, the head of that, has not met for weeks because they've been campaigning for re-election. Wrap your head around that. As these cases are exploding, they haven't had a meeting? Contrast that with what's happening on the Biden front. And right now, Vice President Biden, President-elect, I got to get this through my head. It's so hard to remember this. I even heard people slipping up and calling him president already. He's President-elect. Although, I guess not technically until he's officially certified, but I guess in the mainstream media eyes, he's the President-elect. He's been having multiple task force meetings and already setting up his coronavirus task force, holding meetings and talking strategy. And their task force says, look, we understand that we don't have two presidents in the United States at any one time, but we're trying to take action and work as quickly as we can to get this set up because we know this is going to be the biggest thing we will face in the early part of our presidency. One big piece of this, though, is getting access to these government agencies so that they can start to get the information and funds in place for this transition. Now, this is incredibly important because after 9/11, do you remember what one of the big critiques was and one of the major reasons why we were caught flat-footed on 9/11? Yeah, it's because the transition from Bill Clinton to George W. Bush was slow. So slow, in fact, that George W. Bush managed to not have enough people in place at these different agencies. It was like a real slow rollout in filling these different positions because of the huge delay between the Clinton administration and the Bush administration. There was a lot of animosity at the way that transition of power happened. So it was enacted as a law that the General Services Administration has to basically move that timeline up to almost right after the election. The GSA, the General Services Administration, has to sign off on this. They basically have to authorize, sign off on the election. And it's the next step for the head of the General Services Administration to rule that the election results are final. Okay. And he has to do this. And he would enable the transition team to expand its work and gain access to government funds to start building their task force, doing what they need to do. But there's a problem. Because President Trump is in charge. And Biden officials are prepared for legal action right now if that administrator, her name is Emily Murphy, a Trump political appointee, delays that decision. So she right now is not moving on this. Do you know what happened after George W. Bush left office? He vowed that it would be a transition of peaceful power over to the Obamas, so that we didn't have another 9/11 or another problem like that, a national catastrophe where this administration was caught flat-footed. Because it's not about politics, it's about all of us, right? I know maybe President Trump doesn't see it that way because everything's always all about him. So George W. Bush within the same afternoon after President Obama had won, that letter was signed and authorized so that the Obama administration could come in and start work and get these agencies set up and the funds in place to start that transition. That hasn't happened yet under the Trump administration. We have a pandemic. Let's just play politics right now, you morons. One question, though, I have is whether or not we will actually see something President Trump said come true. Now, President Trump, a few weeks ago, made a prediction. Do you remember this prediction? His prediction was that we wouldn't see the mainstream media covering the coronavirus after the election. that if, you know, Biden wins, that's going to go away. Mainstream media is not going to talk about it. Well, if this weekend was any indication of that, he was right. How many of you watched any kind of mainstream media news this weekend at all? Just flipping around, you know, Fox, MSNBC, CNN, etc. Very little coverage of coronavirus. Now, I get that the discussion of the moment is this weekend, of course. It's now President-elect Biden. So that, of course, is the coverage. And we want to talk about that there's dogs coming into the White House now. Yes, it's a cute story. But my wife at one point said, I haven't seen them talk about the 120,000 people that have just now been just now got coronavirus. Like, where's the coverage of this? They brought out all these old, they brought out like Joe Lieberman, Al Gore, you know, they brought out all these old people from back in the 2000s when everything was contentious. Like, let's just talk about that all weekend, but let's not have any discussion about coronavirus. So the question I have is, will these mainstream media outlets, these liberal media outlets, actually cover the virus? Or will it mysteriously just go away from their airways? Because now Biden's in charge. And we don't want to talk about that. So again, watch what they do, not what they say. So again, what we want to focus on is the mainstream media. It comes down to the numbers. If you see them covering it, if they've got, you know, Dr. Fauci on there talking about how bad it is, if they've got these, you know, other members of the Biden administration talking about how bad it is, good for them. But if it's suddenly swept under the rug, this is where we need to hold our mainstream media outlets account for their hypocrisy, because now it's getting worse. And I can't imagine that in January, it's suddenly going to be better once Biden comes in on his white horse. Don't fall for it. Don't fall for it. So I'd love to hear your comments below. Smash that like button and subscribe to our channel. If you're new here, we're going to talk about the stimulus in a moment. It's easy to subscribe. I'd love to hear your feedback. Any good comments coming in? Anyone disagree with me? Anyone agree with me?
Yeah, there's a lot of both.
That's usually how it goes.
Let's see it. Yeah, nothing that I can bring up right now. That's mostly just conversations around the topic, but no real questions or anything yet.
Oh, John Hamilton says they are talking about it right now on CNN. Yeah, they're talking about it right now. Remember, we have 70 days of President Trump being a lame duck. So it's an easy contrast for CNN to show President Trump, who spent the whole weekend on the golf course, and coronavirus cases surging, and Vice President Pence not holding a task force meeting in weeks. So yeah, remember, it's still the Trump presidency on CNN right now. But just wait until January. Look, I'm an equal opportunity offender here. And, you know, just watching all the effusive love for Biden over the weekend, I'm like, this is what I'm worried about, is that people go back to sleep. People start falling back asleep.
Well, and he's already...
Once the mainstream media gets...
He's already packing his campaign with war hawks, or his administration. So,
yeah.
You can probably count on
a lot of the same.
War.
You're already seeing in the task force. People, familiar faces, people who served on the Obama administration. So it's, you know, it's getting back. It's that's the fear, right? This is what others have been saying, is that Washington is going to kind of go back to normal. Washington, D.C. is going to go back to the way it was when all these people, all these Washington insiders had their jobs, had all their money. So we'll start to see. But we'll get to that in a second, because will we get a progressive agenda? I'm going to tell you who's pushing to make sure that progressives are not left out in the cold. It's good news, but is it honest? We'll tell you about that coming up in a minute. And will the Biden administration actually bite on some of the big policies and things that we support here on this show? We'll see. It's a lot of talk right now. See if they'll actually back it up. First, I want to tell you about, before we get there, our friends at Outlet Finance. You know, a lot of you have been saying, thank you guys so much for telling us about Outlet, because it's not tied to the corrupt government banking system. It's not tied to Wall Street. You know, if you've got your Wells Fargo savings account where you're making 0.001% on your, you know, couple hundred dollars that you have in savings, or a couple thousand you have in savings, you're actually losing money every day because it doesn't keep up with inflation. So your dollar is actually losing money every day you have it in one of those bogus savings accounts. But that's the difference with Outlet. If you go to morninginvest.com/outlet, you have to use that link. And once you open up your account, they will give you free money in your account. They will deposit free money into your account just for opening it. You can open it with $10, $100, $1,000, whatever you've got that you want to put in there and start earning some savings. So you can deposit and withdraw at any time. They've got SOC2 compliance, and your funds are free to use at any time you want. So it's also, by the way, insured. So let's say you put a money in here. Let me show you this little dingus they have on their website here. Let's say you start with $10,000, right? After 1 year of 6% APR, you've got $10,600 because of the interest rate at 6%. Okay, I want to put in $30,000, right? I'd be earning 6% over the course of that year. Nothing, no savings account even comes close because it's backed by cryptocurrency. So it's outside of this corrupt government banking system. Again, take advantage of it right now, and they'll deposit free money into your account. It's just a savings account alternative. Go to morninginvest.com/outlet. And yes, many of you said, oh, they're not available in. Hey, Grover's not happy about that. He wants them to be available in New York. They're working on that. They're also working on their compliance in Texas. So a couple of you said, I've tried to sign up, but I'm in Texas or I'm in Virginia. So just check and see and if they're available in your state, but they are working on that. Some other states have different pains in the butt things that they have to deal with. So that's the truth on that. All right, let's talk about the stimulus now. Some huge news on the stimulus front. Grover is super excited about this, as am I, because turns out there are quite a few things that Vice President Biden, President-elect Biden, can do through executive actions. Now, these are things that were not on the table for President Trump. These are not things that President Trump was interested in doing because there are too many big money guys telling him not to do this. While you have right now, you have Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell in the Senate and the House resuming stimulus talks yesterday, but they're back at it once again. They're back talking about the same exact things. Not surprising at all that they'd be back having the same debates about your package is too big. No, it's too small. There's nothing that's just right. So Mitch McConnell says, yes, we would want another stimulus. We're going to try to pass it before the end of the year, but it needs to be targeted. It needs to be targeted right at coronavirus. Among the things that are missing from his agenda, no stimulus checks for the American people. Zero. Nada. There would be PPP money in there, a renewal of that. Nancy Pelosi says, look, this is a non-starter. We want it to be around $2 trillion. We're not budging on that number. And it needs to have stimulus checks. Okay. So then you've got Joe Biden now around here floating around the outside. And headlines this morning just talk about how quickly the Biden administration wants to move forward on the pandemic and the economy, already setting up a stimulus and pandemic task force to start to hold meetings and to move forward on executive action. So according to the reporting this morning, Democrats have already set up a number of executive orders that are already lined up and ready for Joe Biden's signature. Interestingly, with his win, he would be able to go right after forbearance. So let's talk about forbearance and let's talk about student loans. So these are executive actions that are already being written up, ready for a Vice President Biden, who's now president-elect, who would then become president. So let's talk in January when he's president, okay? Can you forgive me the many titles? So in January when he's president, there will be a list of executive actions that he will on day one sign, according to the reporting this morning. First is forbearance for mortgages. Here's what would happen. As homeowners, again, are trying to regain employment, more jobs have been added to the economy, there's still huge levels of foreclosures. And what could President Biden actually do is continue the forbearance programs for another year through executive action. Fully, all the way through 2021, through executive action. That's a huge move, and that's one of the plans already being talked about by the Biden camp. Student loans would be second on this list. This is huge. You would be able to, through Biden's executive order, write off $50,000. I just got chills. and by the way, I'm no Democrat. I'm no Republican. I did not support Biden and I did not support Trump. But a $50,000 student loan forgiveness for this group of young people who are saddled with massive amounts of debt and can't get a job because of a pandemic. This is enormous. And is exactly something. I remember when Nancy Pelosi put forward the $10,000 student loan forgiveness. I said, that's too small. $10,000. Most, the average student loan debt is over $30,000. So $10,000, fine. That's a help in part. But now these kids who have to pay back the student loans and they don't even have a job in the field that they studied in. This is fantastic. Government coffers would be better spent helping those who never had a chance to go to college in the first place. They're able to take some of this money, reinvest it into helping other people who haven't been able to go to college. Give them an ability to get started as well. Through executive action, the president could also do this. So in addition to an executive order to write off up to $50,000 in student loan debt, they could also write off debt that's outside of student loans. Those people who went into debt just trying to keep their family afloat. So there's push for that as well. So if you've run up credit card debt during this time, the president might be able to write off this through executive action. And the government would foot the bill for it. So Wall Street would be happy. In fact, this is why, you know, remember, Wall Street loves a president that's bought, you know, these presidents that are bought and sold by Wall Street. This would make Chase happy, wouldn't it? This would make Bank of America happy, wouldn't it? Hey, all these people can't pay their bills. They're falling behind. They're going to have ruining their credit. What if the federal government can step in and write off up to, you know, $17,000 per debt holder without the obligation of having to pay back $50,000 for student loans? So among the things we know right now are on the table, forbearance, student loan debt up to $50,000. There's other things that the president-elect is also considering, and this would, again, be an end around Congress. Extensions of rent, being able to provide some sort of rental assistance at the federal level. So again, the presidency, I should say this, the power of the presidency is fairly limited constitutionally when you compare it to Congress. The executive branch is fairly limited. There's very little that a president can actually do. Trade is a big piece of that. They have carte blanche, really, on a lot of trade policy. Peace accords. That's really what the power of the presidency is all about. But there are some advantages from an executive action department that are powerful. Think about the Emancipation Proclamation under Abraham Lincoln. Think about how long that lasted, up until the Civil Rights Bill. That was like the law of the land through executive action, the Emancipation Proclamation. There's a number of things, of course, through history where the executive order has lasted and stood the test of time. The Monroe Doctrine. I'm going to go back to James Monroe. So there are a lot of things, trade policy and other things that the president has the power to do. Executive action is a smaller piece of that. But it really comes down to Congress to pass any broader stimulus package. But this is some exciting stuff. There are some other plans from Vice President Biden. These are all posted, by the way, on his the transition's website. They want to include secure funding right now for ramping up coronavirus testing, acquiring additional protective equipment, such as masks and gowns, and investing $25 billion in vaccine manufacturing and distribution. But of course, one of the big hangups right now is this General Services Administration, the GSA. As you heard me talk about earlier in the show, the General Services Administration is responsible for helping set up that transition office, signing off on it, getting funds over to the new Biden administration, helping them set up their coronavirus task force, etc. But right now, that GSA, that administration official who was appointed by President Trump, has not budged on this. Has not signed off on it yet. Just to give you a frame of reference, when George W. Bush, the night President Obama won the election, the very next day, that letter was signed and Obama was able to start moving on this. Again, I come back to the reason we have it in the first place, and the reason now it's been moved back almost to Election Day is because of what happened on 9/11. And we know that because we had a delayed transition of power to George W. Bush, that we were caught flat-footed. And one of the reasons the intelligence agencies believe that one of the major reasons we were caught flat-footed is because the Bush administration didn't have an ample amount of time for their transition. They were caught flat-footed, and we changed that date for this very reason. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Get on it, GSA. You want everyone to know your name? No one knows who the GSA is unless you do something bad. And you're doing something bad right now, sitting on this money, sitting on this ability for this cabinet to get set up, sitting on their ability to set up this transition office so they can actually go in and start doing work on this coronavirus task force. If Mike Pence is out golfing and that task force literally hasn't been meeting for weeks, how about move out of the way, let somebody else do some work? Or you just want to continue to, you know, bury your head in the sand and pretend like you've won this thing. You haven't. They have to have access to these federal agencies to move on this. But without any movement on Trump, without any movement on Congress on a stimulus, this is exciting news on the stimulus front. Pieces of the stimulus that Joe Biden will go around Congress with a list of these things that he's inaugurated at the end of January. He will immediately go to the White House and sign these executive orders. We could see this $50,000 in student loan forgiveness. I mean, just think about that for a second. What a generation of young people could be lifted up as a result of that. Millennials are getting hit hard, and those college kids right now who just got out, graduated, have no jobs, maybe living at their parents' house right now, or unable to pay their rent, so they're facing eviction. Yeah, college kids facing eviction. Like, they haven't even started their career yet. And already they're having to have this huge setback. Another executive action the President Biden could sign as well is a credit forgiveness. Not just on the money front, but that your credit score should not be affected by this. So there's a bunch of things that they're lining up right now from Vice President Biden for transition on the stimulus front. So some good news there. I'd love to hear from you. Smash that like button if this is good news and subscribe to the channel and drop me a comment below. I want to hear your thoughts on these executive actions. Let me know in the comments below. Any good comments on this coming in? I'd love to hear.
Somebody's saying they're not a kid, but their student loan debt is $40,000. Will that be forgiven?
Yeah, under this it would. Because it would be per borrower up to $50,000. So again, wrap your head around this, folks. Like, this is not small potatoes. This would be huge. But again, I think, you know, this is just for the college people, and not everyone in this country goes to college. And as we've known from what's unfolded over the past few months, the hardest hit population in this pandemic has been the people that haven't gone to college, the service sector workers, the hospitality workers, who have now gone into further debt just to not lose their homes. That's why I'm saying this idea of also covering some of the credit card debt and basically saying that the federal government will step in and foot that bill through executive action and also extending that forbearance moratorium. That would really help, I think, those people who are not college educated, who don't have student loan debt. I mean, I have a family member who's got student loan debt of up to $200,000. For a social work degree, she will never make that much money back doing that job to cover the cost of getting that master's degree.
What percentage of that is probably interest?
Well, good news is that interest is fairly low, right? Like 1% or 1.5% for these loans. But for a lot of people that's the problem though. People have pushed these loans off for so long. Or they're able to claim hardship under coronavirus. It's not eliminating their debt. It's just accruing interest, but they don't have to pay it right now. So that interest just continues to build up and they don't have a job and there's no job there in their field and they can't pay their rent. So I think these are some good moves. It's not the end all be all, but you have a Congress that's intractable, you know, sitting there fighting back and forth over these things, back to Pelosi and Mitch McConnell fighting once again. Over the size and scope of a coronavirus bill. But hey, it is good news at least that there is movement on that front, that talks have resumed between Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell. Will they get anywhere? I'm not really sure. But drop me a comment below. Any more comments on that?
Yeah, and then Levi Matthews is saying, yeah, you can write off $50,000, but under federal IRS tax law, you must report that as earned income, and unless Congress changes the law, you are on the hook for the taxes of $50,000.
True. If, well, again, this would be something that that they could work with Congress on as at least a provision that would go, you know, if they could change that, because that wouldn't be difficult for them to put it where they wouldn't have to pass a broader stimulus if it would be treated as earned income. It's a smart move if they do it that way, because then you're having to pay. It's like when, you know, people get pissed that Oprah gives them a free car, you know, hey, everyone, you all want a free car. And then they're all pissed because now they have to pay taxes on this new, you know, $40,000 Ford car that they just got. And they're like, what?
Well, and the thing is, like, if that puts them in a higher tax bracket, that tax goes up even higher, right? I mean, I remember when I was making pretty decent money, my taxes were crazy.
Yeah. So hopefully they've thought of this, and hopefully this is a discussion point that if they're able to do something with executive action on that, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of questions as to how broad your executive action powers would be. But I'm excited that they're thinking about these things that have some teeth instead of some of the executive actions we saw. The only thing I think that had some teeth was President Trump's unemployment extension of the $300, but using FEMA money. But that only lasted about 3 weeks. So again, I'm not saying that that was bad. If that's all he had at his disposal, great. Reuse some of that FEMA money. Okay. To which I say, right in the middle of hurricane season, we kind of need that money for other purposes, but we'll see. We'll see what Congress is able to do here over the next few weeks.
And then we got a couple super chats. Slev and Robert is saying, what about stimulus checks? We need help. Yes, we do. And then John Hamilton is asking your thoughts on Trump not conceding yet.
On the stimulus checks front, Mitch McConnell does not want stimulus checks. In their smaller proposal that they're talking about right now and negotiating with Nancy Pelosi, she says it's a non-starter. A piece, their stimulus plan on the Mitch McConnell front on the Republican side is narrow, it's skinny, and it does not include stimulus checks. But again, that's a non-starter for Nancy Pelosi. If you're thinking like the president himself could cut checks, $1,200 stimulus checks by executive order, he cannot. President Trump would have done that, I bet, in order to save his presidency, if he had that power to just send out checks if he wanted to. But that power comes from Congress. They have the power of the purse. That's why I talk about the Constitution. You know, the presidency is constitutionally pretty limited when you measure things up. It really is. And the other question was on, what do I think about not conceding?
Yes.
I think it's ridiculous at this point. So at some point, you need to... It just comes down to ego and hubris at this point. For the future of your country during a pandemic, to act like a giant baby. Like, I could understand if there was some sort of nationwide, widespread fraud. There wasn't, and there isn't. So even if there's always going to be little voting irregularities here and there. That always happens. But as his Republican counterparts have told him, there's not enough to do anything. So you want to complain about a voting irregularity in one particular precinct, that a grandmother was sent a ballot that she had already voted, and then they came in and checked it provisionally or whatever. Great. You think there's enough of those mistakes that's going to cover millions of votes and hand you Georgia, hand you Arizona? By the way, Republican states, Republican governor, Republican secretary of state. And these Republican secretaries of state have come out and said, no, we had integrity in our elections. These are the results. So they're going to have a recount. Great. Which is really just rescanning all of the ballots they currently had. So they'll do that in Georgia. I'm sure they'll do that. And maybe in Pennsylvania. I mean, at this point, to not come out, and concede. And the sad thing is that he's doing this, I believe that he's doing this just to start his own television network and his own media company. I've done a few videos now, go check them out, where I talk about Trump TV. I think the reason that he's not conceding is because there's 70 million people whom will listen to, you know, will listen to anything he says. And if he says that this election was stolen, he immediately has a launching pad for his own Trump television network to say, screw you, Fox News. I talked to some sources at Fox who were telling me that, you know, he is pissed at Fox. Like, he is done. He's done. And this sets him up perfectly. Sets him up perfectly to start his own network to say, screw you, Fox News, for calling Arizona before you should have. In the end, they were right, but okay. Screw you, Fox News, right? He's been laying that groundwork for the past couple of months anyway. Then starting his own Trump TV network. He's already done that. He's already created his own channel. He already has upwards of 2 million subscribers. By the way, can we catch up to them? Go ahead and subscribe to my channel if you're not already a subscriber. We do this show every day at 9 a.m. Eastern. Let's catch up to Trump TV, shall we? Because we're going to spread the truth here on this show.
I would like to see him and Chris Wallace in the same room right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not going to happen. You know, but my question is, which of those, you know, Fox anchors will be wooed to come over to Trump TV? You know, will you have, you know, some of their big anchors like a Sean Hannity leave and go over and start working for him?
If it was going to be anyone, I think it would be Hannity.
Well, I mean, look, the future of television news is not cable. You know, these cable providers, as you know, are hanging on. These dinosaur cable providers. Like, who's getting a cable box anymore, right? Who's buying a cable box and doing that? The only reason you get one is because it's part of, like, your internet package. And you're like, oh, you're throwing that in free? Because I'm paying for internet? So this, like, disintermediated media right now, you know, having your own app on the Roku box and... and we should do that, by the way, David. We should get a Morning Invest app on the Roku box.
Yeah, that's possible. I have Apple a friend that doesn't. You know,
Apple TV, we got to try that. So you could just log into the Morning Invest app right on the Apple TV or Roku and all of that, PlayStation, Xbox. I mean, that's the future, right? You have these big mainstream media corporations that want to silence voices so that they go and they start their own network on their own website, and you know. So I think this is the future. It wouldn't be surprising. I mean, look, the fact that Bill O'Reilly has a show again, you know, and it's not on the dinosaur news networks anymore, right? I mean, it's in a totally new environment. So I think that these new movements toward this is going to happen. So I think him not conceding is all in an effort to set his name up for the future. This has nothing to do with the integrity of the election. It only has to do with him. And hubris and ego. That's it. And so I had a great point here. My wife just sent this. She says, oh, and by the way, Republicans are supporting him because they know he'll maintain his megaphone. Yeah. Did you see Kristi Noem up there in the Dakotas this morning? Governor of, was it North Dakota, right? She came out and says, yeah, you know, so she's seeing like future television job on Trump TV. So she's coming out saying, you know what? This Trump should fight legally because this election is rigged, fight. So she's pulling out all stops. Watch for her to have her own television show on Trump TV in the future. You can see all these guys laying the groundwork right now. So funny to watch it because I've seen it before and I'm just, it's just like watching it unfold right before us. I will replay this tape in 3 months when what I've said is true and comes to fruition. Mark my words.
You realize it's not called tape anymore, right? It's just...
No. I was thinking of that this morning. I was thinking of that this morning. Like, something popped in my head, and I was like, yeah, we can go back and look at the tape. But what do we say now? Like, what do we... We can go back and look at the footage? We can go back
the video,
and look at
the... We can go back and look... review the video.
Yeah. And also, this is not how... We don't even talk on phones like this anymore, but this is how I do it still. Because how else are you supposed to do it? Like,
I don't know. We did get some breaking news. Alex Trebek seems to have passed away.
Is it fair to call it breaking news when he died yesterday?
Well, I didn't know it was yesterday.
Oh, okay.
So it is for me.
Yeah, breaking. Alex Trebek. Okay. Hey, we've got some David breaking news. This just in from yesterday. Alex, that's what this, I'm going to call that a segment from now on. Alex Trebek is 80 years old, passed away on Saturday night at his home hospital room. Do you know he actually filmed, by the way, Alex Trebek, host of Jeopardy. They filmed the last number of episodes 2 weeks ago. They haven't aired yet. So he was still working up to 2 weeks ago in pain, like after surgery. He was such a workhorse. Like, he didn't complain at all. Like, he just, I mean, he had died of pancreatic cancer. One of the more difficult cancers to deal with, of course. That is what Steve Jobs died of, Patrick Swayze. So he was fighting an uphill battle, but yeah, was working and professional up until Saturday. He was in fact texting with his producer on Saturday about next week's shows, and they passed away. So, good guy. Oh, they have shows up until December 25th. Is that right, Andrew? Wow. Yeah. Paul Mantaloni says, Clayton, I feel that Trump should resign right now so Biden can get started with coronavirus task, even if it would only just save one life. Yeah. Right. That's not going to happen, Paul. Paul, you know what's not going to happen? He's not going to leave a nice letter for Biden on the Resolute desk. You know, that's been a custom over the last 20 or 30 years or so. It's not a new custom. I mean, it's not an old custom, but you leave a letter for the incoming president, right? Put it in the Resolute desk in the Oval Office, and presidents read those, and it's usually pretty touching. You know, it's a show of, hey, regardless of our differences, we're still a great country, and we come together on days like this. I guarantee you will not see President Trump at his inauguration either. How many of you watching right now think that President Trump will be at the inauguration on the Capitol steps and shake President Biden's hand and wish him luck?
Well, I don't think they should be shaking hands they'd have to be 6 feet apart.
Or just do an elbow bump.
Yeah.
He's not going to be there. Mm-mm. He's not going to be there. He's going to be launching Trump TV.
Maybe they need to build a transitional White House down the street from the real White House. So it's like, that's where the president elect lives and that's like, okay, well, if he needs to, since Trump won't leave, we'll just take over another house.
Right. We'll be across the street.
Yeah.
This is we're going to call it White House Part 2. Or they should call it the Black Lives Matter House. And this one will not be built by slaves. How about that? How controversial would that be?
Yeah, don't even make it white.
Right. Nancy Dubin says, I haven't heard about that Resolute desk since National Treasure movie. Yeah, that's what they do. They put it in the Resolute desk. Put that letter in there. It's pretty cool. I love those little, those little pieces of history. All right, we got more news here, and then we're going to get you out of here this morning and get on with your week. This story, I think, is really important for the future of the Democratic Party and progressives, and that's why I wanted to dive deep into it today. So I want to talk about this story. I think this is really important for the future of what we talk about here on this show, progressive issues, and trying to move perhaps the Democratic Party further as much as we can in line with progressive issues. Make no mistake, here's what I think. I think the Democratic Party is very similar, if not in lockstep, with the Republican Party. They're bought and sold by Wall Street. There's very little daylight between these two parties. And that's why, as President-elect Biden said a number of weeks ago, nothing will fundamentally change. He's right. There's truth in that statement. Nothing will fundamentally change. They will continue to print money. The Federal Reserve will continue to prop up Wall Street. Wall Street continues to donate millions of dollars to the Democratic Party, just like they do the Republican Party. Democrats continue these foreign wars. By the way, President Trump, the only president not to expand these foreign wars. And in fact, I think that's one of the reasons he's been forced out by the corporate media and the corporate elite.
I agree.
Wanting to pull back on our troop presence there, don't you? I mean, no one's talking about that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you look at who Biden's putting in his administration already, It's like the military industrial complex is like, hey, look, we got to move. Trump like put us behind by 4 years. We got to get going on this again.
Yeah, he brought all his Trump people in, his Mar-a-Lago people. But, you know, or the military people that he put in there, like Mad Dog Mattis, he gets them in there and then doesn't see eye to eye with them and rakes them over the coals, mocks them publicly, calls them crazy, calls them one of the worst generals in American history. And, you know, and wants to end these foreign wars. So say what you want about Trump. You know, Trump, he's an evil warmonger. Not quite. I mean, he stood there against Vice President Biden, or he stood there against Jeb Bush during the debates, saying, hey, your brother got us into one of the worst wars in American history. By the way, it's one of them is still not over with, 19 years. And when President Trump said he was going to start to bring all these people home from Afghanistan, boy, everyone flew off the hook. Warmonger Lindsey Graham out of South Carolina called him up. He said, what are you, crazy? You had all these establishment Republicans that get all of their money from these defense contractors. All of these guys who funnel billions of dollars to Boeing and all of these defense tank makers and everything else. Make no mistake about it. It's not being a patriot to not want to kill indiscriminately, kill brown and black people all over the Middle East. Well, and by the way, spend $900 billion a year in a defense budget. Give me a break.
Did you see the speech that Obama gave leading up to the election, where he was talking about how much more Joe Biden understands foreign policy than Donald Trump? It's like it's just them pushing that narrative, right? Like we gotta have more war.
We gotta have endless wars, and not even just more war, just an endless. We can call it the war on terror, started by the worst president I think in American history, George W. Bush. People forget how unpopular that guy was when he left office. Warmonger and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. And then now George W. Bush is rehabilitated because he's down there painting pictures of puppies. Give me a break. So, again, I don't support either of these parties. I think they are both bought and sold by Wall Street and the military industrial complex. That's why they continue to stay together. And that's why we don't have a good third party, because they're run out of town. All of that money is keeping these voices from actually helping the American people. So with that said, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had a pretty big weekend. Not only did she win re-election last week, so this is her second term, she is now fighting back against the establishment Democrats. She's immediately pulled off the gloves. So I want to parse this a couple of ways. There's a couple of different interviews that she did, pretty surprising interviews that she did. She went right after the administration, the Democratic administration, in a New York Times piece this weekend, basically saying that she wants criticizing the Democratic Party for incompetence. She says it's a no holds barred push to get the Democratic Party to line up around progressive issues. This was her post-election interview with the New York Times. She's warning them. She's warning that if the Biden administration does not put progressives in top positions, the party will lose big in the 2022 midterm elections. Signaling that the internal moratorium in place while the Democrats worked to defeat Donald Trump was over. You know, the, hey, Biden law or Bernie Sanders lost, but we got to get Biden in there because Trump's terrible. So now we got to work together to get Trump thrown out. Now that niceness is done. We're done now. She said, look, the party's loss of congressional seats in last week's election is because many Democrats didn't support a Green New Deal, didn't support the progressive messaging around the movement for Black Lives Matter. And I think she's right. I think the proof is in the pudding. The fact that Democrats couldn't expand their base. They lost seats in the House. They didn't win the Senate. No state legislature flipped in favor of Democrats. They barely held on to power in the House. You know, and then Nancy Pelosi gets on a phone call with her caucus over the weekend and said, we have a mandate? From who? I'll tell you where the mandate's coming from. The little support that you were able to garner from the likes of AOC and Bernie Sanders trying to do their part to get out there and try to support this Democratic establishment, you have them to thank for winning. because you lost support among African Americans. You lost support among Latinos. You lost support among Venezuelan Americans, Cuban Americans. She says this, there's a reason Barack Obama built an entire national campaign apparatus outside of the Democratic National Committee. And there's a reason that when he didn't activate or continue that, we lost House majorities, because the party in and of itself does not have the core competencies, and no amount of money is going to fix that. Hallelujah. She won the election more than 50 points for supporting progressive ideas. Now, is she perfect? No. And there's a lot of people think that she was just full of crap. Oh, you're through it. Because she was doing all these interviews in the past few weeks, really talking about Joe Biden, and she was sort of dancing around. Do you think, well, you know, he's not really in support of like ending fracking like you want. He's not in support necessarily of these progressive ideas that you want. Are you going to be able to find common ground on that? She's like, I think we will. Now she says, look, here we go. The truce is over. The failure of the party to operate an online strategy in a real way that exhibits competence, she says, made it hypocritical for the party to advance criticism of progressive messaging. She said, if I lost my election and I went out and I said, this is moderates' fault. This is because you didn't let us have the floor vote on Medicare for All. And they opened the hood on my campaign. And they found that I only spent $5,000 on television ads the week before the election. They would laugh. And that's what they look like right now, trying to blame the movement for Black Lives Matter for their loss. Isn't that amazing? So she only spent $5,000 on TV ads. You know why? Because there's an old saying in marketing. Like, if you need to spend money on advertising, like a big amount of money on advertising, I think Michael Pollan talks about this in The Omnivore's Dilemma, talks about why don't we see commercials for broccoli, right? Why don't we see commercials for other things? Because the things that are typically bad for you are the things that require advertising. So think about that the next time you see all these political ads. So AOC didn't spend anything on ads. And she won by 50 points for supporting the exact same things that we're talking about here on this show. Medicare for All, the environment, public college, so we're not having to deal with this massive student loan debt, ending these foreign wars and reinvesting that money back here at home. So now we've got Biden in there, who, of course, voted for the crime bill, who, of course, voted for the Iraq war, who under Obama expanded the number of wars we have in this country, who had more drone strikes in the Middle East than did his predecessor, George W. Bush, who started it all. So now these guys are coming back into office. And she's like, look, the truce is over. We're done. So this grassroots activism, she says, that produced large turnouts in Detroit, Philadelphia, and Georgia was crucial to Biden's victory. And she says, if they don't enact some of these progressive agendas, then we will not be there in support in 2022 during these congressional races, and you will have a massive midterm election loss, Mr. President Biden, if you do not support some of these things. So what did they say? Well, looks like they are there, at least in the preliminary stages right now. They are saying that they are going to support this position. Democrats are now saying, and the campaign manager for Vice President Biden is saying, that we will be on board in a big, big way. We are going to support these progressive agendas. We are going to come out and put our money where our mouth is and really support these progressive ideas that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants to. So we'll see. Do you believe that? Do you believe the Biden administration will embrace, will they put a Bernie Sanders as labor secretary? Imagine how powerful that would be, to have Bernie Sanders, a champion of workers' rights, placed in the position of labor secretary. Now, let's be honest, labor secretary is not a terribly powerful cabinet position, but it's incredibly important to be able to drive worker policy. So it's not like, you know, secretary of state level, but there's a lot that the labor secretary can do that he couldn't do otherwise if he was not in that position of power. So imagine a Bernie Sanders in that position. Imagine, you know, an Andrew Yang. Look, Andrew Yang has been, all weekend, of course, a champion of UBI. He ran against Biden all weekend. I saw him on CNN and other places just like screaming. He was so excited that Biden won. I don't know if he's legitimately excited about it or he's really angling for a position in a Biden cabinet position. But of course, we've got troubling news on, you know, ideas of placing people in on the short list for Treasury Secretary under Biden, you know, coming straight out of Wall Street. Not a surprise. Just like a Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, you know, straight out of Wall Street. Instead of someone who's a, you know, maybe someone from the small business community. No, got to support those big businesses. We got to support Wall Street. But here's something I disagree with on AOC. This news I found a bit troubling this morning. I think she's taking a thing a little too far. I'll get to this in a second. But she tweeted, "Is anyone archiving these Trump sycophants for when they try to downplay or deny their complicity in the future? I foresee decent probability of many deleted tweets, writings, and photos in the future." She wants to make a list. She's got a list and she's checking it twice.
Well, so she supported Biden. Doesn't that make her complicit in the wars that are about to happen? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Well, you're not the only one that thinks that, because to read this tweet thread is pretty funny to see these people. Hold up, AOC, Samantha writes back to her. "I voted for Biden. I'm proud that I voted for Biden. I'm ecstatic that he won and I despise Trump, but I draw a hard line, firm line at compiling lists of people who supported another candidate. That reeks of communism." Yeah, but, you know, Samantha, you voted for Biden. I love this idea that you want to start making a list of people that worked for Trump. I mean, these like low-level staff members who are supporting these different government agencies who, you know, worked at the IRS, who, worked at the Treasury Department. You know, these are not policymakers. These are government workers who, you know, are working in this administration. I talked to people who are, you know, work at embassies, who they work for a political appointee, you know, as an ambassador, but the people underneath the ambassador are not political. They're not political. So now anyone who's worked for a Trump administration, we want to put them on a list and make sure that they never work anywhere again. This is like, I want to go through this Politico piece a little bit because I find this troubling. Why didn't we do this with the people that worked in the Obama administration? Who started all these wars? Who built cages to separate families at the border, who allowed, you've heard me talk about this before, who allowed offshore drilling, deep water drilling that led to the Deepwater Horizon spill. How about all the people that were responsible for that? We make a list so they never work again. We didn't even do this under George W. Bush, who, by the way, was far worse of a president than Trump. All of those warmongers. I mean, Donald Rumsfeld retired nicely back to his house in St. Michael's, Maryland. I remember one day I was driving through St. Michael's, Maryland. He and his wife were just coming out of a restaurant, getting in their car. They were laughing, carrying on. War criminal. Donald Rumsfeld, who said that, you know, if we start bombing in Afghanistan after 9/11, there's not enough good targets. It's not good TV. We need to go into Iraq, even though they're not connected in any way. He got a book deal. He was on TV talking about that Winston Churchill solitaire game, or that card game that he built an iPhone app for. He was doing fine. Dick Cheney as well. Dick Cheney's got his nice big home out in Wyoming. Oh, and by the way, Liz Cheney is starting to rise. Is that the future of the Republican Party right there? Bring back the warmongers. So we didn't do anything to them. They all got jobs. Former Bush people. Think how many former Bush people wound up on CNN for crying out loud with jobs on the air.
Clayton,
or MSNBC.
Clayton, waterboarding is not torture.
Right. Waterboarding is so much fun. It's a lot like skimboarding or wakeboarding. It's not torture. We have these moron reporters, these conservative reporters. Like, yeah, I'm going to do it live on camera just to show you how not bad it is. It's like Rick Sanchez deciding to get tasered on camera just to show how not bad it is.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
By the way, one of my all-time favorite videos, Rick Sanchez being tasered. It's one of the greatest things ever. So we're going to make a list of these people? I mean, I find this disgusting. This is something literally that you would have like in China or, Soviet Russia. We're going to make a list of people so they can never work again. These low-level staffers. So here's what she says. In fact, they've already heeded her call. People are already starting the Trump Accountability Project. So AOC tweets this out. People are like, yeah, let's do that. Let's make sure that none of these people get jobs anymore. Is anyone archiving all these Trump sycophants for when they try to downplay or deny their complicity in the future? I foresee decent probability of many deleted tweets, writings, and photos in the future. Somebody better go out there and archive all this stuff. Guess what they are? The Trump Accountability Project has just started. It's a new organization that just started, thanks to her comments. Remember what they did, the website says. The group's sparse website declares, according to Politico. We should not allow the following groups of people to profit from their experiences. Those who elected him. Okay, so the 70 million people that elected him. Those who staffed his government. Okay. What was it, 30,000 people in the executive branch that have jobs? And those who funded him. Oh, wouldn't that be nice? Let's start looking at those people who funded him and see how many of those people that funded him also funded you, the Democrats. You want to really start shining a light on this, AOC? Because guess what? Bet your Speaker of the House, I bet your other members of the House leadership, probably a lot of cross-pollination there between people that have gotten money, that had funneled money from the Trump campaign to you, I'm sure. I'd be willing to bet my own money on that. Here's what one of the members, the White House official says. At first, I brushed it off as ridiculous. But what is scary is that she is serious. Let me pull this up. I actually have the... So this is the article. I believe that he said, this is terrifying that a sitting member of Congress is calling for something like that. I believe there is a life after this in politics for Trump officials. But the idea that a sitting member of Congress wants to purge from society and ostracize us should scare the American people. It definitely should scare the American people more than it scares me. That type of rhetoric is terrifying when you have 70 million Americans who just voted for this president. It might start with Trump officials, but what if they go further? Many Trump advisors, though, say they're not worried, that they point to the aftermaths of similarly controversial administrations as reassurance. Of course, Bush-era politicians and staffers who led the country to war in Iraq and then survived without being purged from politics, the media, and corporate America. And the Trump advisors won't either. It'll be interesting to see how many of these Trump advisors wind up on national television. Mark my words, they will be employed by the major media networks very soon. You will see them popping up with contracts on Fox, especially when Trump TV starts, because these networks will need to remind people how corrupt Trump is. So these people are going to start popping up on CNN with employment, at MSNBC with employment, and Fox with employment. Oh, and by the way, when they start going after the OAN network, then you're going to start to see former Trump officials popping up on that network too, so they can attack Trump TV. And Trump TV will love it. Trump TV is already in the works. So there you go. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Should we be putting people on a list in order to blacklist them, keep them out of society? No jobs. Let me check my Trump list here for your employment here at Taco Bell. Are you on the... Oh, I see. You want to work here at Taco Bell? You're a former senior Trump administration official. I'm sorry. You might otherwise be overqualified for this job, making chalupas, but I can't do it. I have the list here. I have the McCarthy list. AOC better slow her roll. Let me know your thoughts on this in the chat below. Don't forget to subscribe to the channel. You know that we don't pull any punches here on the channel. Thank you so much. And oh, we got a bunch of new channel members today. You can become a channel member, don't forget, by going to morninginvest.com/join. We had 11 new members today. So thanks to all of our new members. Really appreciate that. We do our members-only chat Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. Eastern time. So thank you guys so much for watching. I really appreciate it. Any good questions we could wrap up with before we get out of here?
Well, a lot of people are... There's the whole conversation about separation at the border and that Obama did technically take kids from families. That discussion is right. Going on in the chat right now. So what's your thoughts on that?
Right. They didn't technically, but they deported more people than the Trump administration did. They had ICE rounded up more people in the United States than the Trump administration did by a lot.
Like, I think it was like half. It was like 400,000 or something like that. It hit at one point where Trump's mm-hmm. highest was, I think, 200 or 170 or something, I believe.
Like 180. Yeah, like 180 or 170. So the Obama administration. And the reason is because the media wasn't focused on it. The media wasn't covering it. And then as soon as Trump starts doing it, wow, you're doing this?
Well, and that's been my argument for Trump is like, the reason that, things got like people were holding him under a microscope. And that's why I felt like it was almost better if Trump would have won than Biden, because that's to your point of people going back to sleep because Trump, they wanted him under a microscope because they didn't like him. So they were looking at everything he did. And it really revealed a lot about the policies of our country. Yet now that Biden's back in, everybody's gonna be like, well, those things are going to go away. But those things were already in place when Trump took office. So that's one negative to Trump leaving office is people are just going to, go back to sleep.
And that's what I fear. There's this argument that Obama ramped up deportation and they still wouldn't work with him on gun legislation or anything else, that he was going to ramp up deportation as like the card. Like, we're going to kick people out so that you'll work with us on gun legislation. There's also some arguments, this idea that Obama was ramping it up because they knew that that an incoming Trump presidency would really hurt these people. But that doesn't take into account the fact that this was happening 4 years before Trump was in the discussion. Also, these cages that were set up, that's the thing that Biden didn't want to talk about it because yes, these cages were set up by the Obama administration where children were housed in these. Get into discussion about building a wall and all of these other things. Seeing these families separated where their children don't know who their parents are, that's, inexcusable under the Trump administration. So we didn't have that happening where these families are ripped apart and you have over, 500 families that don't know where their kids are. The kids don't know where their parents are and the system has no idea. They're being kept at like a Hilton or a Hampton Inn or whatever, and like under lock and key right now. And President Trump during the during the debate says they're being taken care of so well. Yeah, that's good. That's really great. They're being taken care of really well. But you did take their parents away. But they are getting a continental breakfast at the Hampton Inn. Tone deaf. Rebecca says, "I'm not going to be sleeping here." Good. That's the thing, I'm just fearful of this. I really am that when Biden gets into power, the mainstream media is going to go back to shoveling even more crap instead of just being this piece, this mouthpiece against Trump. They're going to just become champions of Wall Street once again, of ignoring this. These are the stories that really got me fired up in politics years ago under the George W. Bush administration. I was, going to campaign events as much as I could, organizing events. And these are the things that I really used to lose sleep over. I think, I see it more clearly now than ever because I was in the mainstream media for so long and I got to see how this operation works. I got to see how these, like watching these sort of career pundits on national television who just make the rounds. This is how it works. They'll get a phone call at midnight. Hey, Nancy, you're our medical expert here at CNN. We need you to come on and talk about how how people are getting arthritis from, you know, using their phone too much to call. I don't know. I'm just making something up. And they'll be like, okay, yeah, I'll come in and talk about that, because they want to see themselves on TV. I witnessed it firsthand. So they go in, they want to talk on television, see themselves on TV. Hey, Dr. John is here. John, hearing the story about people are getting arthritis from typing too much on their phone. Are you seeing that? Yeah, I've read that article too. I've read that Mashable article. Me personally, I see thousands of patients a year. I've never seen this at all. But yeah, this little clickbaity headline story is really interesting. This doctor, just to get beyond, that's how they do it. So all of these like career TV people who are former administration people, they're all just part of one big spoon-fed pile of crap. You see these same faces popping up over and over again on these network television channels. So don't fall asleep, everyone. Thank you so much for supporting independent journalism right here on the show. Morninginvest.com/join. I don't answer to any corporate overlords except Grover,
who's well, you do
earlier and running around.
You do hold your phone wrong, though. Just throwing that out there.
I do.
Yeah, you.
How am I supposed to hold it?
You were doing this again. That's like, I think you were right earlier. I think it's more like this now.
Because this is what people, you know, this is like, hey, I'm going to call you. I'll call
me.
You. Call you. But no one has a phone that looks like this anymore. So what do we do now? We just go.
Call me. And honestly, how much do you actually use this as a phone?
Oh, it's so funny. My wife borrowed my phone this morning and she said, my phone's dead. Can I use it to make a call? I said, sure. So she took it and she couldn't find the phone app. I have the phone app is buried in a folder. I never make phone calls. She's like, where's your phone? I can't even find it. Like, isn't that funny? Even during the last iPhone event, they didn't mention that it was a phone during the whole hour-long presentation for the new iPhone 12. They didn't talk about anything regarding the phone. They spent 20 minutes talking about the camera.
Yeah, it's definitely a communication device.
When's the last time you made a phone call?
I don't remember the last time. I mean, I do get calls every once in a while that get through all my layers of security. But other than that...
Right. You and I, when I talk to you, I mostly send you voice messages.
Yeah. And it's so much more efficient because then we can look at it and answer on our own time. Like, it's like you're, there's so much commitment to a phone call now.
Right. Oh, yeah. Like, I've got a phone call in. Yeah, in just a few minutes, I've got a phone call. And like, I'm literally not looking forward to it. I can tell you, I don't look forward to phone calls at all. Like, I look at it, I see it on my calendar, and I'm like, oh my God, I have a phone call today? Like, I literally have one phone call, and it's on my calendar. I'm like, oh my God, I have a phone call? God, I'd rather go to the dentist than get a phone call.
I'm in the same boat.
Lise Burgess says, hey, I still have a landline phone. Do you ever use it?
Well, that's the thing. Like,
who uses a landline?
When I was getting CenturyLink, they're like, hey, did you know you can save money if you get TV and a phone? I'm like, well, I don't even use my regular phone. And people use that argument for emergencies, but I don't know.
Well, Lise Burgess says, yes, she uses her landline. Who are you calling?
There's one of our poll takers.
Right. I like Lise. Are you sitting down and... are you sitting down like it? Is it corded also? So you have to sit by the cord and talk to your girlfriends? Hey, thank you, everyone. We'll be back here tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern time. Hey, thank you for that super chat. I like 1111, by the way. 1111 is a really... What is a... Honey, what's 1111? It's lucky. Someone just left a super chat. Said poop farts is a COVID-19 symptom. Thank you so much, Wall Street Tech 1111. Yes, thank you for that. I hope so. I'm not going to check that out. I'm not a doctor. I just play one on the internet. Thank you, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow, bright and early, 9 a.m. Eastern time. Much love to all of you. Bye, everyone.